And what's up? How to live softly or sustainably in the world outside of hope. I asked Mark Douglas to come to this session. He's got to leave about halfway through due to another commitment, but he's the village garbologist and has been working in that capacity for about a year now. And he's got some answers, as Daryl Chang probably has some answers.
Not me.
Having to do with recycling and what we can do with our waste and what our ways of taking care of solid waste. And Al Pitcher is here, who's always got a few ideas for us, a few challenges. And I hope that we can have a good discussion this afternoon. I really have three areas where I see life outside of Holden B. And one is black, your home. This is kind of where we spend the most time. And then okay, we'll reorganize the priorities. Do we spend the most time in our workplace, our home, or our church? Do you really?
Home.
Few homes.
Home.
Few workplaces. We'll put them side by side. And I took the Y off our.
24 days and what kind of work?
And if there are any pastors who are parish pastors, they probably spend most time in the church, our churches. Are there any other places we could put down?
On the highway.
Pardon? On the highway. Getting from here to there to there to there.
When you're traveling a lot, it's hard to find recycle places.
Yeah. Okay. The highway.
They don't recycle aluminum in Hawaii.
Really?
It might have, you know, people drink tons of soft drinks and they don't recycle aluminum anywhere on the island of Oahu.
Should we put Hawaii down here?
They just throw it in the ocean.
In the ocean.
Wow. Any other places where we live outside of Holden, where we... Pardon? Anybody? We're looking at places outside of Holden where we can work on our lifestyle.
Clubs.
Pardon?
Clubs.
Clubs.
Just community. Do something.
Community. Which involves clubs, shopping,
restaurants.
Yeah.
School. The kids.
School. School.
The dentist and the doctor.
Yeah.
Like
med places. Anything else? We're filling the board. I like this. Places where we live outside Holden, where ecological, environmental concerns.
Parks.
Are apparent. Parks. Recreational places.
Yeah.
Recreational spaces.
No, we don't spend much time in politics.
But it's something to talk about, eh? As I introduced to the people that were here, those of you who just came in might not have got all this. This is hopefully a time where I'm not teaching because I really have nothing to teach. It's a time where we share what's happening in our lives and how we're living outside of Holden and how we can live and just ideas that are happening in our lives, concrete things. We get very cerebral at Holden sometimes. And you know, a lot of times that doesn't transfer into action. But when we go out from here with some concrete things that we can do. Like, hey, I can carry an insulated plastic cup around with me everywhere I go instead of getting a new paper cup or a new paper wax cup wherever I purchase a drink or...
Hopefully not quite so few.
Pardon?
Hopefully not quite so few.
I drink a lot of fluid, Al. Give me a break. Or I can carry a backpack with me over my shoulder instead of having to get a bag everywhere I buy something. Hopefully I won't buy things right now. But to like if I have to pick up a few groceries, vegetables, I can throw them in my backpack. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Here you
go. So let's start. I'm kind of wary of sitting up here, but I will anyway. What's happening in the world? Oh God.
Disposable diapers are filling up the landfill.
Okay, so what can we do about that?
Get cloths.
And that's another thing that's built into life here at Holden.
Or make a better disposable one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not working as yesterday's garbology showed us.
Well, I think a certain amount of disposable diapers are just quite necessary.
Yeah, but it was more than unnecessary.
Yeah. You know what they have that a lot of kids are using over in Narnia? It's kind of cool. They have these little, you use a disposable diaper, but there's a Velcro diaper that goes over it. So you, I feel dumb saying this. You like fold it as a disposable, or the, not disposable, you fold the cloth diaper in third and lay it in this little, like a panty or something, and then you just, you know, take the kid and Velcro it on, and it works. I mean, it is easier. You don't have to use the pins like you do for normal cloth diapers, but it's cloth instead of plastic.
It just has a lining.
Right, and they're washable and reusable.
Great.
Yeah, they have, the Velcro diapers are great now that they're using reusable. A couple ideas that people at our church have done, kind of shared that I think are good, and both of them kind of go at consumerism, just trying to raise awareness. One of the families in our church charges itself what's called a luxury tax. And if they buy something that is considered something that they don't need, and of course this makes you aware of want and need, they as a family determine that they need to give a percentage of that cost away to someone. And so it heightens the awareness, and like if they take a vacation and that costs some money, they will then, that's something they don't absolutely need.
Your vacation is not needed?
Well, I think they're looking at what the average people in the world can do, and things that really are luxuries, and yet they're not saying we're going to totally eliminate luxuries from our life, but we're going to acknowledge that they are more than most people in the world can have by having a luxury tax. And we haven't done too well in doing it yet, but I think that's it's kind of a neat idea. It sort of heightens your awareness and maybe is a beginning step towards less consumerism. And I think another thing is if you bring something new into the house to get rid of something at the same time, and that does a little of the same thing, that you maybe are aware that to give something else away to Goodwill or recycle it or something, so you're aware that you're not just accumulating, but you're trying to, both of those are maybe beginning steps, they aren't getting better, but sort of both awareness and maybe trying to counter the accumulation.
Yeah.
Our church has what we call an exchange day twice a year. It's sort of like a giant garage sale. Everybody brings what they don't want and parks it out there, and everybody else walks through and takes what they do want, and anything that's left over is given to the local Salvation Army, Union Gospel Mission, or whatever. But there's no money ever changes hands. Mm-hmm. It's just my junk is maybe something somebody else wants and vice versa.
What a fabulous community building exercise, too. I mean, everyone's got everyone else's stuff.
Yeah, and after you tire up, the next time you take it back. But it's fun.
What else is happening in
the
world?
I want to know, is would the environmentally sound or not. I've heard it both ways. You know, I have some friends that just built a energy-free or low-energy home with a compost toilet and everything, and they can't even get the permits anymore to heat with wood and do all the things that they wanted to do. They had to end up building a house and going, you know, basically without it getting any permits. And some of the things I've read now have said that wood heat is actually more polluting.
Air pollution.
Yeah.
In our area where there's not a lot of wind, the wood fires in the wintertime, the increase in wood fires and fireplaces has really destroyed the environment in the wintertime.
Like, I started saving stuff, you know, for the burn barrel, you know, when we recycle burnable stuff, and then you get fucking people say, you're burning, you know, is it better to just smash it all down and take it to the landfill or to burn it?
Well, what do we think? Who knows about wood burning?
I think there's a new regulation in Oregon about wood stoves, that they have to have a catalytic converter in them, and they really have to keep them up to the level.
Yeah, there are also some clean burning pellet stoves that I've seen, especially in Oregon. They run on, I think it's some sort of compressed wood or sawdust pellets.
Looks like rabbit drum.
Yeah, the heat is not the same. It's more of a convection heat, so you don't get the strong radiant heat like you would from a normal stove, but it puts out a lot of heat and it does heat the home.
We have friends heating an entire house with them, and it's a big, big house.
Yeah.
Well, I've always heard that wood is as bad as coal. The carbon dioxide is given off.
That's the carbon dioxide mandate.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's the carbon dioxide mandate.
Well, the situation with carbon dioxide from burning any type of carbon-bearing material, coal is, in terms of its weight percent, its molecular weight percent, is the worst offender because it has the highest weight percent of carbon dioxide or carbon in it. You oxidize that, it produces per unit amount burned the most carbon dioxide. Wood still is, on a weight percent kind of basis, a greater polluter than something like natural gas. Methane, propane, butane, those things, when push comes to shove, those things are the lowest carbon dioxide generators of the fossil fuels. And wood. Mm-hmm. So wood falls in between.
But you also have to think about renewable versus non-renewable.
You've got to take all of those kinds of things into consideration, sure.
Okay, we move from diapers to heat. Yeah.
I think one thing with heat is that the fireplace is not efficient. If you're going to get wood, get an efficient wood-burning stove that's designed that three logs will last you all night.
Yeah. Fireplaces are
fireplaces for looks only.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of heat that goes out of there.
There's a lot of heat that goes out of there through the chimney.
Yeah, through the chimney, but not out into your home. It doesn't help much. It's an aesthetic thing.
Well, I flew to Rio and I insisted that my wife and son take the train. I said I could not come here if they wouldn't take the train. And I flew to Rio, then to Los Angeles, and then I've been on the train since, and we'll go home on the train. My understanding is it's about like driving the single person in a car to fly an airplane from the amount of gasoline. Yes.
And the train is more efficient?
Much more efficient. I can't tell you exactly how much.
So
the job.
We're onto the highway section, or the rail, or the skyway section of our lives outside of Holden. And this is something that I'd like to touch on. I'm a student at Pacific Lutheran University, and I get around by my bike a lot. And I've found that bicycling, really, it can accomplish a lot of the things that I used to do in my car. And of course, my car broke and I didn't have one. So I had to rely on my bicycle. That was kind of a blessing in disguise. But bicycling, as far as a small community, mode of transportation is extremely efficient, and it also makes you healthy. It tones your body, and it doesn't tax the joints because there's no pounding pressure.
And that would get to politics, because I think it's something that a municipality or a state or a county can invest in that's not overwhelming, so you can really lobby for development of good bikeways so that people really can do that. I know Minneapolis, apparently there's something on NPR about, and Minneapolis has for 20 years been building bike pathways, and now it's to the point people really can commute. Where they, you know, it took a long time to get that developed, and now people can commute.
If you live in Minneapolis, you have to ski. You can't ride your bike.
There's a similar situation in Sacramento, though, and the bike paths go virtually all the way up toward Folsom, which is a fairish piece out of town now. But I know of numerous people that commute to downtown Sacramento from out near the Folsom area because they have such a well-developed bike path network. And Sacramento obviously has a climate that's conducive to that kind of stuff year-round.
Yeah, bicycles
so
are.
Have a climate conducive to bicycling year-round.
Bicycles are also a lot cheaper to produce than cars are. You can produce a bicycle for about 1/24. A good quality bicycle for about 1/24 the cost of a good, low-cost new car. And that's a lot.
I like this little electric car you have here.
Cushman.
The Cushman.
That's the brand name. Uh-huh. Everything at Holden has a name. Yeah, that's pretty handy for getting around here.
How do you charge that?
Electric cars are somewhat of problematic, since somewhere the electricity's got to be produced, which uses the fossil fuels to produce the electricity. You do save. Well, you don't save. You save on the smog. I mean, that's why Los Angeles is requiring, I understand by 1998, 2% of its cars not to have any emissions.
Yeah.
Although the technology is certainly in place out for solar charging, again, it's somewhat climatically dependent, but there are electric cars that plug it into the charger at night. The charger itself has been solar charged during the day.
Or wind. Is wind playing a part in that too? Mm-hmm.
Try to indoors and door.
Do they recharge the batteries here with the hydroelectric plant?
Yeah, and all the power at Holden is hydroelectric. Mm-hmm.
Just thinking of cars. Cars are essential to our. There's just so much you can do with a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to look at the kinds of cars we buy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good used cars on the road. We don't have to buy new ones. So we can look at the kind of car that we buy that's gas efficient.
Mm-hmm.
We can roll down the windows instead of using the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this hits all of us right where we are right now with the cars that we have or our needs.
We can drive about 5 miles slower and save a lot of gas too.
If you double on average the present miles per gallon of an American automobile and double it from its present 26, 27, so you put it up in that 50 to 54 mile range, you could basically cut out your importing of foreign oil entirely.
My wife doesn't want to buy a Honda Civic. It's too small for her son. She thinks, and of course what he's going to be, and she's afraid of it in terms of its vulnerability to accidents.
Uh-huh.
But clearly you can get 40, you can get 50, 60 miles per gallon.
They're all like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they've all have to take care of the accident problem. If they were all of that nature, then they would take care of the accident problems.
Or if everyone bought them, we could take care of the population problem.
Yeah.
There's an article that was in Garbage Magazine, which I didn't even know existed until yesterday, but I was reading it. And it said that the technology is there to produce a bigger car with 50 miles per gallon. It's just there's not the demand for it. So if people would demand that, they would produce it.
I think,
Sweden designed a car. I don't know, they only had one prototype, but it got something like 50 or 60, I think it was a Volvo. They only made a few of them, and then they said there wasn't demand for it.
Really? Now, why wouldn't there be the demand for that, I wonder?
Because they were so expensive.
The initial cost.
They didn't have to produce them, because it cost them, and then people buy them.
Handmade car, that's your Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And that kind of car would basically have to be handmade, undoubtedly.
A lot of, what I've, just in the past few minutes, I've learned things about technology that I didn't know before. And I wonder why we are so ignorant of what the technologies are. Because I think if we knew, then we would demand. Wouldn't we? I would.
You didn't read the right things.
I guess not. I'd move in different circles. Yeah.
Can I move to another area?
Please do.
What's really concerned is the office. And they were saying in our area that one third of the garbage is paper. And with computer age and everything else, there's an awful lot of paper waste, you know, where you have some computers that spew out an extra page every time you print one page, you get two, and things like that. And I think the paper recycling is extremely important, and also reducing wherever we can.
Yeah.
There has to be a demand created, and I think we have to put the pressure on our government to simply insist, at least in government offices, where we have some maybe power with them, that they use recycled paper. One of the problems is getting the demand for the recycled paper.
Yeah.
I also teach the school kids to write on both sides. And then if they have paper that's printed, we collected all the paper from the Xerox room, all the mistakes and all the that are printed on one side, and we used the backs of those for a lot of the projects.
Now, Holden, the Xerox said, don't use both sides.
Yeah.
It fouls up this machine.
In our school, since we're talking about some, instead of talking about problems, we're talking about solutions, we have, at least my classroom and most classrooms in there have a garbage can, two garbage cans. In fact, I have four garbage cans. One is for colored paper, one is for white paper. And outside my door, in my classroom, is a large barrel that I think had flavoring in it of some kind. That is our glass and tin, or glass and aluminum recycle barrel. They're all over our building. Material that my students get from me that come off my copy machine, occasionally they will get something that is first sighted, but anything that they get is first sighted, I collect and reuse them, give them a second sight. So I use almost all, if I can, mm-hmm. if it's available to me. It's not always, but it's almost available, almost always. I try to use anything. I don't try not to use any paper for my copy work.
The city where I live, Albany, Oregon, has garbage collection day. If you put out newspaper, magazines, cardboard, glass, plastic, number one and two, and
tin.
They pick that up free of charge.
The city does.
The city does. No, it's not the city. It's the garbage company. But the garbage company.
Yeah.
It's
contracted by the city.
Yeah.
Our city does it.
Yep. They do in Vancouver as well.
And I don't have. I used to have a garbage can. They come every week and pick it up. I don't need to use that anymore because
that's a sore point in our town.
Oh well, when my garbage can gets full, which is maybe once every 3 months, then I can call them and they pick them up. Mm-hmm. So that's some cities and some states are working hard on that. And one good thing about Oregon is they have the bottle bill. They're one of the first states that have that. We have to pay 5 cents for each can or bottle, and you don't see cans and bottles. What?
10 for the big things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and some states fight that because, and the stores fought it to start with, but it's a really good thing.
Now, if you bring a bottle back, I'm not familiar with the bottle bill in Oregon, but if you bring a bottle back, do
You get 10 cents, or whatever you paid for.
Okay, but...
No, it has to have a stamp on it.
Okay.
It says Oregon Deposit 5 cents.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't check that for a while, but they're getting a little bit trickier about that.
Well, you get one that says 5 cents.
You check it when you live on the border.
When you take it to Michigan, you get 10 cents back.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? We only pay 5 cents on fossil fuels.
We'd burn a lot of fossil fuels if we all went to Michigan for 5 cents.
But that's been, and I didn't think too much about it until I went traveling somewhere, and we don't see cans and bottles in the, on the highway at home very often, but other states, you still see them laying around because...
You still see them in Oregon because I pick them up here.
Well, desirable, they have reusable bottles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Netherlands, I think, has required reusable bottles.
You know, the same is true in Central America. When I lived in Central America, you couldn't get a bottle and take it with you unless you had one to exchange of comparable quality. And what they do is they wash all the bottles, each brewery washes the bottles, then refills them and relabels them.
Well, there's a man in Oregon
who
makes his living out of recycling wine bottles.
Wine bottles,
yeah. Some of the dairies have gone back.
Very good business doing that.
And I think all of this is, you know, all this, the dairies finding, pushing for bottle bills or different companies will reuse their bottles. I know Rainier Beer in Seattle recycles their own bottles.
Mm-hmm. Very few returnables.
Pardon?
There are very few returnables anymore.
Yeah.
I think political action again is important here because I think people are pretty willing. I think once you get curbside pickup, people, I think it's gone from Minnesota now is mandated, and they could get to like in the 20% compliance when it was voluntary. And now when it's mandatory for municipalities and counties to figure out a way to recycle and people have curbside, it goes up, you know, to 80%. And I know in our building, once office paper recycling was available, I mean, you should see the volume that collects very quickly. And once there was a place in town that de-inks or collects for de-inking and collects, that people are very motivated. They're very interested in doing it. Mm-hmm. But it has to be fairly convenient, I think.
Well, yeah. Seattle charges you less if you don't have so much weight.
Yeah,
different sizes of containers. Mm-hmm.
But still, it comes down to the finance again.
Yeah.
You get paid.
Yeah, well, our has a curbside recycling as well, and it picks up weekly. And there was no change in the garbage. I mean, you know, I generate a garbage can like no one does, once every 2 months. And if you really work at it, mm-hmm. you know, you can take your, all of your, anything that's a plastic bag can go to Safeway. Almost every number of plastic container monthly will go to Thriftway. There's not much, if you compost all your food and anything that decomposes, you know, any soft paper, and then the curbside pickup picks up, there's not much left to put in your garbage can.
Yeah.
Plastic mostly.
Plastic mostly that they won't take, that isn't numbered, or is they only take even numbers and ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, do they charge you by how much you have?
No. See, then the city says you still have to pay the same. They still come by and pick up your garbage weekly. I only put it out once a month or so, but they still charge you the same amount of money. So.
Well, see, we have this one-time pickup.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. We're not offered that. The only thing we're offered is you can get a half-size garbage can and they take $2 off the bill every month or something like that. So, you know, maybe a quarter less or something.
You take half off your bill.
Yeah. Well, maybe this as needs thing to deal with. Mm-hmm. And in the city, if you live in the city, you have no choice as to when your garbage, as to garbage pickup. But if you live in the county, you don't have to sign up for garbage pickup. We had a friend who never, twice a year, he would have picked up with garbage accumulated. But we don't have any choice.
Okay.
A couple random thoughts. One of the concerns about refillables is that they have to generally be washed out before they're reused. And what I've noticed in the years I've been in the solid waste field is that people always forget how much water it takes to clean up anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about, and I've seen studies on both sides of the fence on disposables, this washable diapers. We use washable ones because they seem to be better for the kids' skins. But that washing takes a lot of water, and I predict that solid waste crisis will pass fairly quickly, and that, but clean drinking water as a crisis will be with us a lot longer. And so before we rush to go to water intensive uses, I think it bears some thinking. Secondly, refillables are generally glass rather than plastic, and glass has a lot of admirable properties. Scarcity is not one of them, though. And so when we recycle glass, what we're doing is we're paying a lot of money to truck sand around in a separate truck. And that's why you don't get any break on your bill in a lot of places, because now a garbage truck comes through and then a recyclables truck comes through, and you're using essentially twice as much fuel. And glass is, the raw materials are very, very, you know, common material. And so in my own mind, glass is not such a hot thing to recycle. When I go to talks on recycling, what I generally don't hear people saying is, you know, what I'm going to do is not take stuff off the curb, but I'm going to get a postcard or an envelope and a piece of paper and write to the president of XYZ and say, well, I really like your product, and as soon as you start putting it in this kind of container, I'll start buying it again. I never hear people saying that. I kind of believe, though, that's one of the most effective ways to make major changes. And I don't want to start a long diatribe, but one example is green glass. Do you know that most of the green glass in this country comes in the form of wine bottles and beer bottles? And that's a choice of a packaging choice, because foreign manufacturers of those products think that Americans think that it's a luxury imported product because it's in green glass. The same beer you buy in Canada in clear is green bottles in the United States. The problem is, now we've got all this green glass here, and there's not a demand in this country for that recycled green glass, so it starts piling up. It's the next waste material that we're having to get rid of from our recycling programs. So consumer habits and then doing something other than just taking things to the curb, I think, can be a very effective, but it's the hardest thing to get Americans to do, is to sit down and spend 20 minutes writing a letter.
Why do you think that is?
I don't think they know. I didn't know all that stuff.
It's, if you look at any, well, I don't know why that is. I think we need to have more scientific understanding, and that gets into the field of education. Mm-hmm. Recycling is a really mom and apple pie kind of thing, and it's easy to get on the bandwagon.
Oh, yeah.
And forget to say, no, wait a minute, does that really make sense? What would I do if I were physically cleaning up this bottle or this can or whatever?
Reusing bottles does have one bad effect. I've found rats in one pop bottle, and I've found cigarette butts in them, and I've found matches in them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's one in a million. Yeah, I agree to that. But it still happens. It's not a very sanitary thing. Mm-hmm.
Where else can we move?
Well, I'm having some trouble getting Doris and my folks accepted by my wife. It costs a lot of money, and sometimes, particularly if you've got a rheostat, you can't put them on. If you've got, they simply don't work.
It's under anything.
So you've got to change that. And some of them, you know, flicker a little when they go on. It's not a simple matter, and it's very costly.
It seems to me that's where a smart person or a scientist or somebody, seems to me that's where somebody could come up with a way of taking that bulb and making it so.
Well, I understand Pacific Power and Light has fluorescents available at fairly reasonable prices. I have to pay $25 for 15-watt fluorescent.
Wow.
But I've got most of the change.
Do people understand why fluorescence over incandescent bulbs? Is that pretty clear? Don't be ashamed.
No.
Al, could you explain the difference? The power usage is one.
The difference is about, you use about a quarter of the energy to get the same result in terms of light. And one will last about 10 times longer than the other. The fluorescence will last about 10 times longer, roughly. Or so I've read, or so it's claimed.
Well, I think so. We have a fluorescent light that shines in our, that we never turn off. in the last 2.5, 3 years.
I think there's some controversy with their fluorescents, they're really healthy, though.
Yeah, I was going to bring that.
Yeah, they're trying to, you know, even in schools and things, working at their best things for some of the studies they've done, making it even with hyperactivity.
But isn't that the color of the bulb?
Well, you have to pay more to get the, what is the full spectrum you can get, which is quite costly. They aren't about to put them in school yet.
They pay off, of course, in the long run, but the initial investment is, I think they pay off. I'm convinced that they are.
And for what it's worth, apparently, you also find much lower wattage bulbs as you travel through Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually buy 15-watt light bulbs.
Wow. I found a 30-watt. That's the lowest I could find around here.
Eyeglasses.
Exactly.
Yeah. The cost of eyeglasses.
Maybe we changed our work hours a little better to adjust to the daylight.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a piece from the ELCA headquarters, I can't open it right now, in which Job Ebenezer has saved thousands of dollars by changing light bulbs.
Wow.
From the ELCA a year. I'll put the piece on reserve. I've got a file now on reserve.
Great.
I'll put it in. It shows you what he's been able to do at the headquarters.
Another wonderful way we've saved is putting skylights. You don't need the bulbs during the day. Mm-hmm. Dark hallways and things. It's great.
Yeah, that's kind of changing your living habits and your dwelling and even your workplaces to be more energy efficient and light efficient. I know that those big skyscrapers made out of windows, found out once that the windows don't open. You can't get any fresh air in there to cool the place off. You have to have a totally self-contained heating and cooling system. That's just
pressure stupid. System too.
Yeah.
Most schools are built that way. Mm-hmm. Most of those schools are built that way. You can't open the window. If the air conditioning goes up, you're in deep trouble.
You got a greenhouse.
Right.
That's kind of prophetic.
Well, I think I've tried to step by. It's a little complex. 2 years ago, I was up here and I got hyped about all this stuff. So I decided I wasn't going to get anything from my wife for Christmas that I had to buy. So I had some canvas and some paint that I brought up a long time ago, and I painted a couple of pictures. I was really enthused. My son offered her a hike, and he never wants to hike. We really did it, I thought. So we get home, and lo and behold, she sends the pictures out to be framed for $3.26. Of course, the money isn't the chief issue. There was a little bit of wood used, but still, it's very complex to try to do this. And I tried to do that for her birthday. I offered her to clean the bathroom here and do the laundry. And I do the laundry at home. I said, I'll clean the bathroom, the cat litter from now on for her birthday. And lo and behold, a friend of mine who was with me in Rio, somehow got the idea that I wanted her to buy my wife something. And so she said, earrings, $27. Well, you know, it's the whole idea of trying to live without consuming and spending, it's really difficult to pull off.
I think it's kind of challenging too, isn't it? I mean, just the types of things, it forces us to say, all right, what can I do for this person instead of what can I buy for this person? You know, what can I, using my intellect and my hands and my creative personality, what can I do or make or live for this person? And I think that's quite a challenge. It's kind of an exciting challenge.
For my kids, for Mother's Day, I said, don't give me any more presents, give me a day's labor, and that's what I got, and I used it.
If you do buy presents, I mean, every once in a while it's nice to buy presents or to give some. A lot of times I give people something of mine that I enjoy, like a book that I've enjoyed and it's all well worn, I'll give them that. But one thing that I've stopped doing is wrapping things. Mm-hmm. Wrapping paper, mm-hmm. it doesn't really recycle. And it's usually made in some country where the list of human rights abuses is pretty long.
Just grocery bags.
Oh, but there's so many creative things you can wrap with. That's my
I wrap with cloth. I wrap with scraps of my old pants.
You sell me funny
shirt.
Paper bags and something else.
I think we ought to have our craft shop here set up so we could make our grocery bags when they come. Everybody who comes here could make two or three grocery bags.
That'd be great.
I always forgot to take them back out of the house and put them back in the car. And I never
oh, yeah?
When I went to the grocery store, so I started carrying a large bag with a zipper on top that I use for a purse. And I carry it with me all the time. I can carry my plastic cup. I can carry my bandana for drying my hands. I can carry my groceries when I go to the store. And when I go to the, I mean, the people are like, you want paper or plastic? And I said, neither. And this one really flipped out. She could, you know, it's like, what do you mean, neither? I said, well, just put them in here.
I always say nylon.
Well, see if we have those canvas bags that mm-hmm. we carry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, some places are actually providing bags for sale.
They didn't provide.
Or they have an incentive of giving 2 cents off.
Safeway gives you three.
Safeway gives you
6 cents off. But you know what, you mentioned a few things in there that I'd like to get out again. A bandana for wiping your hands instead of using paper towels.
Use your shirt.
Or your shirt. I use my hair sometimes. Or a handkerchief. Instead of Kleenex. And I stopped using Kleenex about 3 years ago, and it's incredible. I remember sometimes when I was sick, I'd go through a box and a half of Kleenex. Mm-hmm. And now I haven't even used 10 Kleenexes in 3 years.
Kleenex is always just recyclable, too.
Yeah.
You know, then again, you got to do what Cheryl talked about earlier, about the amount of the...
But still, if there wasn't any Kleenex, we wouldn't need to recycle it, or we wouldn't need to put it in a landfill. What else?
Well, there's...
Go ahead. You're next, Al.
Oh, okay. Well, for about 25 years, we've used cloth napkins. Uh-huh. And the thing that you find is, too, they make wonderful rags by the time you're done with them. And I think, basically, as far as the washing, we just throw them in whatever wash we're doing, so I don't think it adds all.
Well, I got a couple other ideas. One is cleaning stuff.
Yes.
And I've got this thing here on traditional products and what you can do. I don't know them all, but my wife has this thing up on the refrigerator, and she uses all kinds of stuff, but none of the chemical stuff. So, I don't know what the recipe would be. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of substitutes for the catechins. Mix your own non-toxic cleansers. White vinegar, borax, washing soda, olive or vegetable oil, lemons, used baking soda, cornstarch, salt.
Could we get a copy of that up on the Care for the Creation bulletin board?
So I've got a lot of them somewhere.
Great.
Also, if you have to go outside of the main supermarkets, but if you shop in a co-op or something, to find the shampoos and the personal toiletries that are not only organic but do not use animal products, are not tested on animals. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them are really clearly labeled, but most of the mainstream brands are really bad.
Yeah.
There's the little book, Shopping for a Better World, that mm-hmm. evaluates all the companies with regard to these things.
Yeah.
There's a green catalog, too. They're, I don't know if they send it to us. Send money to somebody. It's got all kinds of environmental products you can buy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might have a better one.
I think also the thing in co-ops is, you're next, finding bulk things in bulk, foods. I mean, you can find everything from dog food to potato chips in bulk bins. Yeah.
Well, I have a question. I make all my own cleansers and things like that. I have not found anything that works as good as bleach. for something.
Really?
Anybody know of an alternative to bleach?
What are you trying to get out?
Well, for laundry or for disinfecting, like cleaning sinks and things like that.
Lemon juice, vinegar, have you tried those things?
Yeah, but that does not take chocolate out of a child's shirt. If it's berry stains, use boiling water, pour it through.
The airlines use club soda when you fill something on, they get you club soda and clean it up.
Boiling water, right, and food. Or wine.
And then there's the matter of meat.
Uh-huh. Knew you'd get there.
I left it for last.
It's an important thing.
They say it's about a third of a ton more carbon dioxide on the average if you eat meat is over against vegetables. And much more water, and of course it takes more grain, and there's more pesticide used, and more fertilizer used to pollute soil, and more energy used, which of course is the root of the problem of carbon dioxide, but and more waste, waste that isn't disposed of in a safe way. So, and of course, it takes more grain. I mean, in terms of the food that it's saying now, beef is about 6 to 1, pork is 8 to 1.
Really? What is it? Eight to one?
4 to 1. Chicken 3 to 1.
What?
3 pounds of grain for 1 pound of meat.
Uh-huh.
So I just quit eating meat 3 years ago, and I just quit.
And you're still healthy?
Well, I have this little document, in case you want to see it, up there, right next to the door, which explains the reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I just quit because it used so much grain in the beginning, but now I got all the reasons.
Yeah, it's...
People say, are you a vegetarian? I'm not a vegetarian. Well, there are all kinds of reasons. In Dean Ornish's new book on reversing heart disease, he goes through all kinds of reasons for going to vegetables in terms of one's circulation, health of one's heart. But I just think it costs too much in terms of the whole world situation to eat meat. But, you know, you could argue, well, you could argue that the carbon dioxide issue is not an issue, that global warming is not a real issue, which my friends do frequently. And so the importance of not eating meat is depends on your decisions about a lot of other things.
But the hunger issue is definitely an issue.
Well, there's a whole array of issues. I think one of the most helpful introductions to that is the preface in Diet to a Small Planet. Mm-hmm. And a whole other books oriented that way. It's not just an issue of switching, but why are we doing it? And why are we choosing to do it? And what issues do we really take seriously? For some it may be animal issues, for others it may be world hunger, for some it may be health, but they're all important and they're all very real.
Diet is one thing that I've found people are really defensive about. I worked as a cook up here at Holden for a whole year, and people get so ticked off when you try and screw around their diet, when you try and control what they eat. It's the same way with worship. When you try and tell them what language to use for God, people get really angry. Because they're very close, they're control issues, and they're things that are very personal and very close. So they are things that we can only decide for ourselves in the end. Hopefully, some of us can give others convincing arguments and we can have good discussion about it.
Or lead them to resources, mm-hmm. instead of make them feel imposed upon,
yeah.
and threatened, because it's just very real.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that one of the professional football teams gave up feeding its members meat before a game, because for some reason or other, they fell into this interpretation that was much more healthy and much more energy producing to have vegetables.
Did they win after that?
That's what it is. It's in the teeth.
I'd like just to bring up one other kind of topic, and that's what we do with our money. And I think that's kind of like the issue of writing letters to the producers or to congresspersons, but taking the time to research about our banks or our credit cards or our phone companies or where we purchase our gas from, it gets real big pretty fast. But I think that's something else, that's another level that we can make an impact on.
Do you have resources where you can start to do some of this stuff like that?
There's a publication that I found to be really helpful in terms of both providing articles about this and then leading me to specific organizations that I've been written to. It's called Co-op America.
There's a copy of that in the village, and I will try and get that copy up by the Creation Awareness Bulletin Board, which is at the east end of the dining hall.
One of the things that is a feature in the annual subscription is a money management kind of guide and leading you to different insurance, that kind of thing, but it's broad and specific.
In the same line with that, we can speak to the effectiveness of PAPS World Fund, which is an investment fund, planning for early retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Been at this for quite a while, and it's done better than anything that we have invested in.
Which fund was that?
PAX World.
PAX World.
Found out about it from the Mennonites. It's a socially conscious mutual fund organization.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about all these things that we've said here, and I know that for me personally, one of the issue is one of the reasons why it's difficult for me to write the letter to the company, the manufacturer, or to the politician, or to decide to walk instead of driving or carpool is the time factor in our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's the really big thing that I think we're probably all faced with. Yeah. And maybe we'll do this thing because, we can fit that in to whatever else we have to deal with. But all of these things, maybe that's because we are using our time wrong, whatever. But I think that's the big issue for me.
Yeah, I think one thing, though, sometimes, I'm in that problem, too, but when you see somebody driving their car to go jogging at the beach, when they could just bike around the block a few times, there are some ways, you're combining your exercise and realizing that's something you really need. It's easier if you don't have a car, but when you get in the habit of walking to the grocery store and walking home and saying, this is my exercise for the day instead of going to play tennis or something else.
I think all these things that we've talked about are symptoms of a deeper problem. And our culture, the way we live our lives, is a very fast, goal-oriented, individualistic culture that kind of creates all these things that we need to have and places we need to be and expectations we need to meet. And that's the root, is the attitude that we have and our mindset. And if we can shift that perspective of what is truly important, not what can we afford, but what can we sustain. When we shift our mindset, then we move into the new world.
But boy, it is ambiguous.
You bet it is.
It is ambiguous. I flew to Los Angeles. The only way I could get the wedding rehearsal for my grandson in San Jose was to fly. Well, I could have not gone to the wedding rehearsal and taken the train and gotten there for the wedding. So what do? I mean, you've got all kinds of ambiguity in your life. It's just all messed up, at least in my life.
It's definitely not cut and dry. Chuck?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Al, because I was hoping that you were going to clarify the point that I was about set to make. promptly muddied the waters. Something that might be useful to have as a reference point, that's why I was going to have Al come back and touch on it. The other day at breakfast, you noticed that he held up Senator Gore's book on, what's the title, Al?
The Earth and Balance.
And Gore has posited kind of an interesting thing. He suggests that maybe we all ought to act as if we were alcoholics and we were going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, the first thing you do at Alcoholics Anonymous is you stand up and say, "Hi, my name's Mark, I have wild hair and I'm an alcoholic."
It's not a problem.
But he's in a state of denial.
No, really, I can handle it.
Yeah, you can get your hair anytime you want. But Gore's thinking is that we are, in fact, addicted to consumption and don't know it. And almost on a daily basis, like the alcoholic or the recovering alcoholic, you get up in the morning and say, you know, how am I going to handle this today? And you have, he suggests you almost have to get into that kind of mindset.
And the worst part is, like in other parts of the world, they aren't addicted to it because they haven't had it. Uh-huh. When they look at us and they see us as a model of they've got all this and we want it, and they turn around and they start doing everything that we're doing, and it's kind of scary.
That was the most frustrating thing for me in Central America, I think, was seeing how these people, these celebrative, community-oriented people, look to the United States as an example for how to live. And I thought, good God, no. Please.
And what to do with the plethora of advertising you get in the mailbox every day?
Junk
send
mail.
It back. Send it back.
Send it back.
Put it in the envelope and send it back.
Someone suggested you wrap it in a brick and send it back, so they have to pay the
weight to it.
They pay postage anyway.
Yeah.
Kind of building on what Charles is saying, I think when I came back from Central America and I asked Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, who took us, about what he felt we needed to do about all the issues that Greg brought up. He talked about community. Mm-hmm. And I think for this too, again, just for this part, that I find I get the most help from hearing from other people what they're doing and having a support system. I think we underestimate, I think what Charles is saying, we underestimate the power this whole thing has on time, on values, on, you know, and I think we have to realize that we really probably do need to build a community around ourselves of other people who care about this and who will support us in it and give us ideas, and however that is, whether it's trying to make your church into that. I think churches should be challenged to, you know, do this. But just somehow find people that you can share the frustrations with and get ideas.